Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Today We Learn. This is a really fun episode, a really great episode. And actually, if you listen to the end, you can find out how you can win an autographed Now You See Me 2 poster from the director John M. Chu, who actually is the guest today on this episode. This episode's a really great episode, really fun episode. John is a great guy. We talk about a lot of things, a lot of fun facts, and a lot of facts about the industry and stuff like that. And you'll enjoy it if you like John's works and if you just like cool things, which you're listening to this show, so obviously you like very cool things. Take a listen to this episode. Tell your friends to listen to this episode. Then at the end, when you're done listening, try and win an autographed poster. Also, go see Now You See Me 2 out in theaters this coming weekend. I've seen it already, and it's a really, really fun heist movie, and it's a fun sequel to the first one if you enjoyed it. So, without further ado, today we learned number 138 with director John M. Chu.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Today We Learned. My name is Razzle, as usual. This is going to be a fun episode. We've got a very talented director here. He's got a new movie coming out that I actually saw. As I enjoyed it. It was
nice.
Really, really fun.
Good.
I didn't say to talk yet. No, I'm kidding. Done quite a few things that have been majorly successful. Very talented. Justin Bieber, Never Say Never, G.I. Joe Retaliation, which I really liked. I'm a huge fan of The Rock.
Nice.
I'll ask you stories about him in a little bit here. And soon to be in theaters, Now You See Me Too. Ladies and gentlemen, John M. Chu.
Yo, what's up?
How's it going?
Good.
Thank
good
you
to be
so
here,
much
Razzle.
For doing this. How are things? You found the place okay and all
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I found the place great. I'm a huge fan of this place, so it's fun to be here. I got distracted even coming up to the studio. I was looking at all the fun toys around.
Yeah, I did all the decorating of the downstairs Meltdown Comics.
Nice.
I come in early in the morning and I set up as much as I can.
Nice.
So we like to start off each episode with the guest providing either a fun fact about themselves or something you learned recently. Anything from a Snapple fact to a new route to get across town. Anything. There's literally no rules to this show.
Well, a fun fact that I learned recently or that – well, one, I had a big a movie bomb last year. And you learn a hell of a lot when you go through that. That's for sure.
Let's talk about that because I know exactly what you're talking about. I was toying around. I had a note here. I was toying around because I'm curious about that
to
go from what because I also know like I have a lot of friends who are directors as well, and obviously there's when it comes from conception to finalization, so many different things
totally
can be occurring. Obviously, if the audience doesn't know, we're talking about Gem and the Holograms.
Gem and the Holograms. Oh, yeah.
But what was interesting also about that, setting up to, I guess, the bombing or what your thoughts are on that, that was one of the, you were doing something new with the movie, I believe, right? Because didn't you also, not only did you cast some people from the internet, if I'm remembering correctly, but you also did did you add a element of Kickstarter to it?
It was just through a Blumhouse movie.
Got
so
it.
It was like
okay.
a very tiny budget.
Okay.
But we wanted to reinvent it and do it for a new generation. It's a 30-year-old cartoon and comic book. And so, we wanted to, it's Gem and the Holograms, very specific. And, I'd been trying to do it for 7 years actually in different forms and things, and studios weren't going to spend big bucks on the property. And so we decided, okay, let's, I love the spirit of it. I remember watching it. I'd watch G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Gem.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to, how do you bring that kind of imagination and craziness to, young kids for today? So that's how it all sort of started. And Blumhouse was they do horror films. So this is a way to do, let's try to get into the sort of family film area and see if we could do it with this. And I had a relationship with Scooter Braun, who had done, I'd worked with Justin Bieber before. So we had the music. We could do great original music. We had a really cool approach. It was basically a contemporization of it, and it was more of an origin story before the actual cartoon ever really began.
Okay.
We sort of were like reinventing what that approach would be so that in future movies you could sort of get into that, because everyone already sort of had been around for 30 years, so you sort of knew those things. So, however, people didn't decide to show up to the movies. I'm still proud of the movie. I really actually am very proud of the movie, but nobody showed up, so what can you do?
So from going from like G.I. Joe Retaliation,
yes,
which was a success,
yes,
to then you did Justin Bieber Never Say Never,
yep,
which was, or you may have done those.
I did Bieber first.
Bieber first,
yes.
Which was also, I got some facts about that, which is a very interesting major success.
Yes.
To go from that, like saying you learned things about having a movie bomb, like what did you, from being on such like a production high point, I suppose,
yep, yep,
to having something that you've been trying to do for 7 years and finding homes for and all that, and
yep,
to having it like just completely,
yeah,
not, I mean, it bombed, but people also were eviscerating it.
people who didn't see it, by the way, because clearly, if people had saw it,
that's how the internet works.
You would have made a little bit more money.
That's how the internet works. People talk about things they don't even bother. I mean,
exactly.
So I guess what are some, like, did you learn anything from that? Did that already come out? I guess also going into Now You See Me Too,
mm-hmm,
were you already working on this prior to,
yeah,
Gem ending, or I guess
they overlapped for sure.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah.
So it's not like you at bombed, and then you had to go into.
We were already done. Basically, the same week that it came out, we tested Now You See Me for the first time.
Oh, okay.
So had Now You See Me tested poorly that week,
yeah,
I would have been in a way worse spot mentally.
Okay.
But I got the high and I got the low in literally within 5 days of each other. And you, as a artist, as a human being, realize you have to understand that that's the depth and sort of variety of emotions you're going to feel in this town, if you're lucky to have, yeah, a career to be able to even put out product like that. So so for me, it was a very quick lesson of why you do this and making sure that you're grounded in the reasons, and you can't, there's certain things you can't control, whether an audience comes or see it or not, whether they agree with your take or not. That stuff that's out of my control, that's the position we put ourselves in. We have the microphone for however many hours, minutes,
yeah,
of your day, and we say what we want to say, and then we're out, and how people take it is a different way, and then also getting people to pay money to go see that thing is a whole nother thing. That's, you know, a marketing department that really figures that part out. And so,
yeah,
I had to really dig deep and say, you know, yes, we tested so well with Now You See Me Too. Oh man, everybody hates me because of Gem, and it wasn't a financial success. What are you? Ultimately, like, you can't. The reality is, like, you just have to make stuff. We're makers. We make things,
yeah,
and we let it out. We make things and we let it out, and the results of those things will vary. And you know, I learned a hell of a lot more when you're tested in that way than if everything was success and you think you're brilliant and,
yeah,
you walk around the world, you know.
Yeah, that. it's almost, I guess, like you know, when everything's a yes man, and it's like the emperor has the new clothes type of thing,
yeah,
where it's like, it's almost better, I mean, better individually in character, you know, for individuals and creatives to
yeah,
have those ebbs and flows,
totally,
because to always be making great things, what's the challenge or what's the climax? And then you start second guessing, I guess,
yeah,
what you're doing anyway.
Yeah, and you hear about that all the time. I mean, you read books and you're,
yeah,
like, oh my gosh, Steve Jobs got fired from the company,
oh, yeah,
that he founded, and you get it intellectually.
Yeah.
But you really don't get it emotionally until you're there and you're like, is everything I imagined myself to be totally not true? Or everything that I hope that I spent all my life building to get people to want to see my stuff, and by having one rejection make me feel like that is all for nothing, that I totally... And really, it's not. That's the internet makes it feel very close. It makes you feel like everyone's in the front row.
Yeah.
Which can be a good thing, and it can be a very destructive thing. And you get to choose of what you're listening to.
It's really interesting how, like, I was talking to somebody yesterday, or the other day about how, like, the front row type of analogy. And
yeah,
it's like you think being on the internet, you think there's so much because the internet is loud. You think that it's like, oh, it's everybody's feels this way, but in retrospect, It's literally just like the front row of a stadium.
Absolutely.
Just shouting over people being quiet who generally agree or disagree completely. Like,
yeah.
Most of the world, I would feel like, almost disagrees with what the loud hate on the internet is. It's just because it's the loudest people are the complainers and the people who just like hating on things.
Totally. And we only have two eyes and two ears, so we can only take in so much. You can take in like 100 things at a time, let's say.
Yeah.
I don't know the reality, but let's say you can take 100 things at a time. And so and 80 of those are the things, because they're angry, are right in front of your face.
Yeah.
And that's what you experience the world as. And it's just not true. I mean, the people who love the stuff don't necessarily want to write all that stuff. And so I love the internet. I love technology. Don't get me wrong. I grew up in the Bay Area in Palo Alto. And so I'm around it, and I see the freedom that it gives and the information that it gives and how it can really levels the playing field across the board. But at the same time, you have to remember, like, our senses are not equipped to handle all those things at once. And so we have to choose between what we want our world to be. And when you're being inundated in that way, sometimes you have to actually step away and filter that and say, yes, I hear you. I don't need to hear you a million times. I'm going to hear you twice and understand that and take that in and then move on with my life, because it's going to destroy my soul if I continue to hear it. So, you know, some people can say if you block someone or you ignore someone, that's you're trying to negate their opinion. But the reality is, sometimes, especially as a figure that people are coming to tell you their opinion about your very personal work that you spent 2 years of your life putting together, it's like, no, I get it. I heard it like last week. I don't need to hear it for 8 weeks in a row. That's what you need to do to survive. And I think that choice everybody needs to do, whether you're being attacked for something that you made or not. I think that everybody, being a high school student, that filter, your own self-filter, is going to be really important.
It's definitely an interesting thing, because it's almost like, you know, it's like cyberbullying or whatever. And it's like, before, I mean, we're roughly the same age, pretty much the same age. And it was like, we didn't have the social media and we didn't have all that. And it's like, well, if you get bullied or whatever, you would take a different way home.
Yeah.
So it's exactly. Like, it's such a, like, I get a lot of flack when I talk to people about, like, get off the internet or block people or whatever, because in the end, it's like, if you're getting cyberbullied, don't go there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Either block the people or don't go on Facebook or don't go on that. And it's like, it's people are like, whoa, why? Then it's like, well, people shouldn't be bullying or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but you're also, I don't know. It's, yes. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it's block like, them or filter them out or don't go to those websites or whatever. Totally. It's like,
and I try not to engage, because it's a losing battle.
It's
no matter,
a losing battle.
It's a debate. Like, you can. Yeah. That's why they have school debate things, because anyone can debate anything for as long as you want. That's just a matter of, you know, the world we live in. And so once you start writing stuff, it's like it will never end. And so it's very frustrating. Even when false rumors are going around, I think when we're doing G.I. Joe, they're like, oh, they're reshooting a whole ending and putting more chanting, and like that was not true at all, and it was being reported by big places, and we, you know, contractually he had to be out of the series itself, so we had no choice anyway. But the idea that was out there, I mean, I could defend it, I could write a whole statement, but honestly, it doesn't really matter.
What's the
and
point?
They're already writing it, so there's just those things happen all the time when I'm not even attached to a project and they say I'm attached to a project, or when they say some sort of story on, you know, you never know. And nowadays it's so prevalent that you can write anything on a blog and it suddenly becomes a headline. And even when they write a headline just for clickbait, and it's totally different in the article. There's no police saying you can't do that. They just do it.
John Oliver, I think it was, his HBO show. I don't know if you've ever watched
that.
Yeah, I
love John Oliver.
He did something about like web science or whatever the other day.
It was so brilliant.
And it was like, it was the exact same thing where it's like you have these headlines and it's like drinking, you know, wine is 20% more better for you or whatever. And then the article is nothing about that. Or the scientists who wrote that weren't saying that at all. They just, it's all clickbait.
Exactly. Totally. And I love those articles, so it's a bummer that I
that's
can't.
That's such a bummer.
But it's hard to see them on my Facebook feed now. I'm like, I really want to read that, but
yeah,
you know, like, I don't want to get sucked in.
I love those. Those are the more, I prefer to see like those science clickbaits than dumb clickbaits. So if somebody's, I'm not going to hate on somebody for sharing something they think is scientific fact, even though they didn't even read the article.
Yes, exactly.
So you were born in Palo Alto.
Yeah.
And you grew up nearby Los Altos, right?
Yes, right in Los Altos.
Palo Alto, for the listeners who don't know, it's Palo is Spanish for stick, colloquially tree, Alto tall, meaning tall tree. But you were raised in Los Altos, right?
Yes.
Area. Fun fact about that, you mentioned Steve Jobs not too long ago. Los Altos is actually in 1976 where Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, along with others, including Ronald Wayne. I love this because like I pull these facts off the internet.
Yes.
And at some point, I've never heard of Ronald Wayne. So I'm curious how many friends of his or whatever, or who's the one adding him to this Wikipedia? Like, Ronnie was there. the three of them built the first Apple Ones in his garage in Los Altos.
Yeah, miles away from me. In a weird way, I was sort of raised by the Silicon Valley to be a filmmaker because my dad has a restaurant there called
Chef
Chu's.
He's a chef, right?
Yes,
let's
Chinese
talk about
chef.
That.
It's called Chef Chu's. He's been there for 46 years. And so when the students are from Stanford or when the engineers from wherever would come in to dinner or lunch, they knew that, Chef Chu's son was into movies and they were working on computers that could do editing for you and do dissolves and do titles, which back then I was just doing tape to tape. It was impossible. So they would give us beta computers and Adobe would give me software from Premiere to Photoshop. They'd all be beta. There'd be no manual. So I had to figure it all myself. So by the time I went to USC in 98, they didn't even have digital stuff yet. So I was already ahead of this curve and figured out how to do it. And I had people I could contact if I had a question about any of those things. So it was kind of to be at a perfect place and at the right time. And the fact that the two worlds are now colliding even more with digital content and having these two Bay Area and LA have to merge in this sort of culture, it's sort of perfect. There's nothing that I could have planned for that to happen. So,
yeah. Pretty cool. Now, when you say your dad, it's Chinese food.
Chinese food.
Chinese food. Tell me what that is. Because when I hear Chinese food, I think of obviously, I think of food that I probably don't enjoy because I'm like an 8-year-old. But B, I also think of like the American Chinese food or whatever. So like what when you say Chinese food and when you say your dad cooks the Chinese food with the last name Chu, what is he cooking?
Well, he has a big menu. There's a lot of stuff over 46 years of stuff that he's doing. But he's doing like he's doing both pot stickers, Chinese chicken salad, which he's really famous for there, and he's doing chow mein. He's doing all those. I mean, he's doing those classics, Mandarin cuisine, I guess you would call it. Not like dim sum. I mean, they're all different regions, and he would kill me if I probably tried to decipher those for you right now because I'm not.
So
quite
dim
sure.
sum wouldn't be considered
dim sum
Chinese
not,
food.
No, it's considered Chinese food, but it's a different region. It's like a different area to my understanding of it. And he's in the kitchen. He's not always in the kitchen nowadays, but he can get back there still whenever. Like I might drive back tonight and he'll be up at 2 a.m. waiting for me and he'll make like the best dish with whatever's in the fridge. And he's really amazing at that. So, and I can't cook at all. So.
You can't cook?
No, because I was always fed.
Yeah. That's true. Cantonese, apparently.
Dim sum
would be Cantonese.
Yeah, exactly.
Dim sum is a style of Chinese Canton cuisine prepared as small bite-sized portions of food traditionally served in small steamer baskets or on small plates.
Yes. And I remember he was cooking, and I called him and I said, Dad, there's this thing in Sharper Image, this little mixer. It's for like $220, and if you buy it from me, I'll edit your vacation videos. And it was this little mixer. You could put VHS in a stereo, and that was the first thing that I got that I could actually like edit something together. And I was probably 9 years old, 10 years old at the time. And then eventually he just came to London on our first day. I just did Now You See Me 2. So we have like Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, Daniel Radcliffe, Jesse Eisenman, Mark Ruffalo, Woody Harrelson, Lizzie Kaplan, Dave Franco, all in a room. And this is the first time we've did our table read. Maybe the second time I've met most of them. And so we had a dinner that night, and I flew out my dad and his buddy, a Vietnamese chef, and they cooked this amazing meal.
That's awesome.
In this little dinky bar below my apartment. And it's not even a real kitchen. It was just like, and they had to like get stuff from all the different stores. They didn't even know London at all. And they made this great meal, and we had our magicians come. So we had three different magicians doing like hypnotism and all, and magic tricks and illusions with our cast, and my dad cooking Chinese food. It was pretty funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah. One of those moments.
Yum cha. Have you heard of that? Do you know what
that is? That's
dim sum. It's
at the tea meal.
It's the drinking tea. Yeah. Dim sum is usually linked with the older tradition from yum cha, which is like a drinking tea.
Yes. And we would go to dim sum every Sunday as a family. And the idea of it is you drink tea and you eat slowly because they come around in carts. So you pull certain things. And you're supposed to spend like 4 or 5 hours talking with your family. Like,
it's a long time to talk with your family.
That's a long time, exactly. But now it's like you just get food really, like when we were kids, because it's 5 of us.
Yeah.
And my mom and my dad, so 7 of us, we just like, my mom would just pile in the food. We would eat it really fast. I'd be like ordering a Coke. And so my dad was always very annoyed by that. We would just order soda and eat as fast as we can.
What's your favorite soda?
I don't drink soda anymore.
Okay.
But
that's good. I have a sweet tooth. Do you drink alcohol or anything like that?
Dr. Pepper is pretty good.
Dr. Pepper,
that's the one thing I miss.
Dr. Pepper and root beer are so good.
I don't know about it. Yeah, and then ginger ale on the plane, like
yeah,
it's hard
because they don't have like planes don't have root beer.
Yeah, I guess is that
or
true?
Or Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, they don't have any
I was
of those
on
things.
One plane over the last It would have been the last year. I was on one. I mean, I fly a lot, but I was on one plane, and I'm like, I always ask what kind of sodas they have. I always end up defaulting to apple juice because I don't like Coke. But they rattled through, and she's like, Dr. Pepper. I'm like, hold on.
They have a Dr. Pepper.
You have Dr. Pepper on a plane?
Wow.
And they did. I can't remember which airline it was.
See, that would be dangerous for me.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like if you're in the air, like, all's fair game. Like,
it is. It's like
they only
have
ginger ale. I can have
international waters, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
they have those cookies with the milk, and it's a disaster. I pretty much eat all that.
Justin Bieber, Never Say Never.
Yes.
You directed it. In the United States, it's the highest grossing music concert movie since 1984. According to Wikipedia.
Well, there it is, yeah.
And do you know, and the third highest grossing documentary since 1982. Now, I have the other two above it as far as the highest grossing documentaries. Fahrenheit 9/11 is number one. March of the Penguins is number two.
Yes.
But I couldn't figure out what the highest music concert movie was in 1984 prior to that.
Yeah,
do you happen to know that?
No, I don't know. I thought we were of all time, actually. So
okay.
I would be interested to see what they're talking about.
Because I was hoping, what 1984, what came out? And like,
no, I was always told of all time.
Okay.
So this 1984 thing is new.
Yeah, that's new. Some Duran Duran fans like, settle down, guys.
Exactly.
I was looking on Wikipedia and on Google. I'm like, music documentaries in 1984. And they're like, The Police came up, Duran Duran, the Thompson Twins came up.
Yep.
And I'm like, none of these are like... So I was curious.
It was a crazy time when I remember jumping into that movie, not knowing much about Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Just sort of, Paramount had called me and said, hey, we have this thing. I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan. And so I always wanted to make I love pop culture as well. So it was like a fun thing to jump into. And I looked over his YouTube page and I saw his first video that he ever made. And when I went to the first video, I went to the first comment ever on it. I went to the second comment and the third and the fourth.
Was that first? Was the first comment first?
No. It was he wasn't famous at all. It was like his mom being like, hey, check this out. Yeah. Tell your friends. And then I go to the 10th. I go to the 30th. And you could see it spread in real time. I'm reading this and watching this in real – well, not I guess not in real time, but watching it in motion – even though so it had happened like a couple of years prior, and that was fascinating to me. That was like, a documentary hasn't been made where you actually have record of what people are saying, and you can play those out and show that and let the audience go with on a journey with this kid that we see in his home videos. That is a kid that like could be your cousin that plays drums, and how does he turn into this this pop star? And how do you feel about him now, knowing him as a human being and not just as some product that you get to like shit on or something?
Yeah.
So, and I grew to love the kid. Like, I grew to love his family and the people around him, and saw how hard it would be for him in the future, because you knew the obstacles were going to be enormous. So.
Oh, it's like he's a child star.
Yeah,
he's a like in the 80s how there were child stars. It's interesting how you look at. How we're in a world now where it's almost harder. Well, it's either harder or easier, because like the child stars, they'd get into drugs and it'd be on the tabloids or whatever. Yeah. And then they would, you know, like, I mean, just look at the Different Strokes cast.
Yeah.
But like now it's so everything's even more public.
Yeah.
So it almost makes it harder, but then it almost lets them know faster that they might be spy. I don't know.
Yeah. Or that it even taps into that thing of an entertainer of wanting that attention a little bit. And so
it's such a
confusing real time.
To be doing that from so young,
yeah.
You know, to be able to last and still stick around. And it seems like he's really starting to.
It's pretty amazing.
I
think it reflects when you see all these child stars become train wrecks. I think it is more of a reflection of us and how we treat these kids more than the kids, because it's a tradition. Like literally every generation has those people. And so I think the fact that he's come out the other end, and he has a lot more to go, and he admits that, and he's working on all those things. The fact that he's come out this other end, it's pretty darn amazing and admirable, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, really great. We were talking earlier about toys,
yes.
So I got a couple facts here, and then we'll talk about some toys.
Okay.
And I got an inquiry about some other things as well. So this will all segue greatly. G.I. Joe, you did G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Yes.
According to the G.I. Joe wiki pages and the G.I. Joe comics, Cobra Commander was a used car salesman who began his rise to power after his Vietnam War veteran brother died while driving drunk. Yes. Racking him with guilt and misguided anger, he funded Cobra at first through a series of pyramid schemes. This is according to the G.I. Joe comics. Yes, did you think of using any of this as...
Well, we have some of his companies in like hidden throughout our movie, whether they're news vans, because he has like a news company,
yeah.
And there's like... They have all these different and so we planted some.
Because I never read the comics, but I was a fan of the cartoon.
Yes,
I was like literally on the way here. I had the cartoon theme song stuck in my head. Yes. Like the first,
which one? The first one or the second one?
They will fight for trouble, they will fight for justice wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe, real American hero. Yes, that one. Or then they changed it when I was a kid.
What'd they change it to? I mean, we were kids at the same time.
Got to get tough. Yo, Joe, got to
yes.
get. So that was like the second half.
I remember. Okay. Yes.
But that was like, I was almost a little bit too old at that point. I was like, oh, they changed the theme song.
Yeah.
Peace out. But.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. It's getting
it was like
be
cooler.
Hip, yeah. Yeah.
So I wanted to use some of those things, but I think there's some issue with the rights of
the
that
rights?
Song or something.
Okay.
Something weird about it.
Could have had him whistling it. Like,
I know,
that would have been interesting.
Have you seen those, the lip dubs of the
those are so funny.
Those are classics.
Actually, I was reading while I was looking up G.I. Joe effects. The guy who created that is one of the writers of the Tim and Eric awesome show.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah,
which
yeah.
makes sense because yeah. those the pork chop one is one of my favorite ones.
Yes. One of the creators is actually a sound designer who did the sound for my Justin Bieber movie.
Awesome.
And he would do the voice. He did like tons of the voices. It was really funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So at the same time, this is quite interesting too, since like we got all the Marvel, all the shared universes and Civil War is huge right now. At the same time that Hasbro was developing its 3¾ Real American Hero toy line in 1981, Marvel Comics, who was the producer of the G.I. Joe comics, editor and freelance writer Larry Hama was pitching a series called Fury Force, made up of an elite squad of soldiers, S.H.I.E.L.D., which is in theory the origin of that.
Yep.
When Hama signed on to write G.I. Joe, he dropped Fury Force and brought in some of the characters into the Real American Hero line, which was that was one of the origins of Nick Fury and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I Larry Hama's like a big G.I. Joe. I mean, he's like the godfather of G.I. Joe, especially the storylines and all those things. I didn't know he had all that to do with that.
Then
cool.
Last G.I. Joe fact, in 1982... there was an ad for Marvel Comics G.I. Joe issue number 1, which was the first time a comic book was advertised on television.
Hmm.
Which I also don't recall any other comic advertisements for comic books on TV. But so I thought that was interesting.
The other fun fact is that if you call G.I. Joe a doll, everyone at Hasbro will destroy you and kill you. So it's an action figure.
Yeah, they actually, G.I. Joe was the origin of the phrase action figure.
Yes, it was. Absolutely.
And they originally, G.I. Joe's in the 60s, they were like 12-inch I mean, dolls. Yeah. They were giant action figures.
Yes.
I mean, they were giant. They were large action figures, and then they shrunk them down.
Yes. Yes.
So you're a fan of toys. You were telling me about how you were looking at some of the toys walking in here.
I used to collect toys both on purpose and not on purpose, but G.I. Joes were huge. I think that's where I fell in love with storytelling. I would have week-long adventures, I'm sure like all of us had, in the backyards with these toys. I would hide them in trees in the mud. They'd stay there for 3 days. I'd bury them back up again. I mean, these stories were like ongoing, and they'd mix all the different characters. So, and then I had other friends who really collected the toys, kept them in their packages, went to conventions, put them in the room. And so I would start that, and then I couldn't keep it in the package, and I would pull it out, and I would usually collect the absolute wrong thing.
Yeah.
And so all the stuff I do have in boxes that are still packed away are worth nothing. So,
like, what ones were you collecting that you didn't open up?
The ones that I didn't open, the WWF ones, for some reason, I was obsessed with
WWF. Which ones? Like the solid plastic?
Yeah, the big solid plastic.
Dude, the big solid plastic. King Kong Bundy was like a doorstop, dude.
Yes, totally.
He was so heavy. It was just, I used to have that, the Hulk Hogan one.
The Hulk Hogan, it's just giant rubber.
It's giant rubber. Yeah. They're not even like action figures.
And I think they had a special one you could only get at like Universal Studios. And had a special edition one of these things. So when we went there, that was like the one thing I wanted to get. And but then I got obsessed with the smaller ones, like Big Boss Man.
Yeah.
And
Million Dollar Man.
Million Dollar Man, yes. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
I had the Hacksaw Jim Duggan giant rubber one. And
nice.
It was just like, and it was like, it's what's great about those two is it's like.
They had a Hacksaw Jim Duggan rubber one?
Yeah. Because it was the giant, he was the tall. He had that, maybe, wait.
I think I had like the Sheik or something.
Wait. Hacksaw Jim Duggan
had the 2x4.
2x4. Maybe I'm thinking of maybe not Hacksaw. Red t-shirt, blue overalls.
Red t-shirt, blue overalls.
Yeah,
the names are starting to escape me nowadays. So red t-shirt, blue overalls.
How do I look this up? It may have not been. Hacksaw Jim Duggan had the short beard.
Yes. And he had crazy eyes. He put his tongue out.
He had kind of long hair, but it wasn't.
Yeah,
this guy, I'm thinking
mullety.
Of, had like, this guy had like the straw hat, and he had like the long, like Hagrid from Harry Potter hair.
Yes. I don't remember.
Overalls.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, man. What's this guy's name? This guy. Hillbilly Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Hillbilly Jim. And this is all I did. I did wrestle overalls, and he comes up there.
Yes.
I love Google so much.
I know, it's pretty good.
Hillbilly Jim is this is the rubber one I had.
The Bushwhackers.
The Bushwhackers. This is the rubber one I had right there.
Yes. Yes.
The Bushwhacker Brothers.
Yes.
So good.
Legion of Doom.
Oh, Legion of Doom.
The Twin Towers. Azim.
That's like, I was talking to
Natural Disasters. That was awesome when they like joined forces, Big Boss Man and whoever, Azim or somebody.
Pretty Boy Floyd.
Yes. Yes. What was the barber? Oh my god!
Butcher the Barber Beefcake.
Yes,
so stupid. I love it though. And this comes into like The Rock. Like, I am a huge fan of The Rock.
Yeah,
I will watch anything The Rock is in. And he was in G.I. Joe Retaliation.
And I got to hold the freaking
the belt.
He brought it to Japan when we were there. And I was like, had the plastic, you know, you can order in the back of the in the old WWF magazine, you can order the Intercontinental Championship belt, championship belt. And so that's what we'd use. We'd wrestle with like pillows, or me and my buddies would like whatever. And then so I got to hold the actual one, and
amazing.
He customized it with his own stuff on it.
Okay.
But it had like all the diamonds and all the things, and it was heavy as shit.
I believe it.
But it felt so powerful to have in my hand.
Oh, of course.
It was awesome.
There was that cartoon, the Hulk Hogan and the Rock and Roll Friends or whatever.
Yeah.
That was a great one. Wrestling was such, I feel like there's obviously genres of wrestling, but the wrestling when we were growing up, where before, I mean, it was huge, obviously, but it was still that fun, like colorful. It was, I mean,
and nobody said it was fake.
It was very racist, obviously, because all the bad guys were like of not American descent. But nobody said it was fake. It was, and what was amazingly respectable and just weird about that is you have these guys like, you know, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
Yes.
And you have like Hulk Hogan and you have, you know, Hillbilly Jim, and you have all these dudes who are dudes.
Yes.
These are dudes. These are like dad bods. Some of them are like ripped, who was not Pretty Boy Floyd, but there was, he ended up dying. He had the mustache. He was like, the dude was like, ripped as can be. I'll have to figure it out.
Ultimate Warrior was definitely ripped.
He was dead. He was gone. He was ripped too. not Pretty Boy Floyd. I'll think of it. Oh, Ravishing Rick Rude.
Oh, yes.
Dude
yes.
was a monster. Yes. But you have all these dudes, and they're like dudes, right? And they're like, I just envision, you watch some of their, like it's a whole YouTube rabbit hole to fall down
yes.
of just their interstitials with like Jesse the Body Ventura and all those guys like calling people out into the camera. And there are these dudes in like makeup and like fur costumes and things like that. And they're just acting like being goofy.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's bananas. The Undertaker is still around, and that's like the craziest character. Like, what is that? And at the time that we were watching it, they never said it was an act. So
yeah.
you're always like confused. As a kid, you're confused. Yeah. You're like, people exist like this? Yeah, what is this?
A dude carries around a snake in a bag?
Yes. And I would always defend it. Like, no, it's real. Like, yeah, Jake the Snake, he like.
Their forehead was bleeding when they got hit.
Yes.
But it's like, it's so interesting because it's like, they're just acting.
Yeah.
Which is bananas.
Yes.
Like it's,
but I think they're all still crazy. But
probably.
I'm sure
is The Rock crazy?
I'm sure it's not. Rock is the – everything you want The Rock to be, he is.
He is.
Like he'll text me the most like inspirational texts. Like whatever you're thinking, do it now. Don't deny it. Go, go, go. And
his
you
Instagram,
got a brother. It's like amazing.
His Instagram will make you feel like the least accomplished person in the world.
And he's ambitious. I mean I don't doubt that he's going to run for the president of the United States one day. I do not doubt for one instant he's going to figure it all out. He's a really good guy, and he cares about his fans, and he cares about his work, and no matter what people tell him, like if you say no to him, that means yes, and he's going to do it at that point. So it's a pretty inspirational person to be around.
He's awesome. He's so good. Like I love him and everything.
Yeah.
Like I just there were in the trades yesterday. They're like. He pitch or whatever, so he's going to be doing a Chinese
Die
Hard or whatever. Like, I don't even care what the
whatever
adjectives are before. Just tell me he's in a skyscraper.
Yeah, I'll
watch it.
And the funny thing is, he came into wrestling a little bit past my time.
Same here.
So it was a little like, who's this guy? What?
Yeah.
What's WWE? Like merging? What are all these things doing? And so at that point, I didn't really quite have a grasp. Only until it became a movie star did I really get to know who he was.
Oh, and he's great. He's got comedy chops. He's so talented.
He's
with
so
everything.
Talented. Absolutely. So I would collect these toys that honestly now don't mean anything to anyone. So,
they mean stuff to all of us, though.
Yes. But the smell of the plastic. I have the turtles. Like, I had the van. I had the blimp that you put helium in.
Like, yeah.
And then you had this little remote control. It was like those. I got really good at convincing my parents that I needed these toys, and then I had other friends who would also convince their parents to get. It was like the spoiled kids club.
Oh yeah,
and then we ultimately together would have the best toys on the planet.
You'd have your parents get you the blimp. We'll get the paddy wagon.
Exactly.
We'll get the Krang. The Technodrome.
Technodrome. Yes. Is the Technodrome in the new movie?
Yeah, I hope
it
so.
Is?
I think so. According to the trailer, there's some weird circle coming from space. And
that's
Krang's on top of it.
That's right.
I'm assuming it's a Technodrome.
Okay. All right. I hope it's there.
Like, it's like the first one was all right. I had fun. It was the turtles.
Yeah.
I don't know how they fit in and out of the sewers being so big, but this new one, you got Bebop and Rocksteady, and it's like, sign me up. Like,
nice.
The 8-year-old in me is just like, this is what I want in a movie.
Nice. I collected Pogs. I collected
Pogs.
Basketball cards. I had like, 1986 was like the best time to get basketball cards because that was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think Jordan and John Stockton and Pippins are all, like, their, like, first years or really young years. And it was, like, that was, like, and I had that set. I had, like, 3 boxes of that. And then I don't know what happened to them. And I don't think cards are worth anything anymore.
We used to collect baseball cards. I used to collect,
nice.
Like, Star Trek. And Marvel had their own cards.
Yes.
Marvel had comic
Disney
cards.
I had, like, a Beauty and the Beast
it's
set.
It's like everybody, it's like Topps decided. Topps and I think Duncan was another company that they just, like, licensed all these things. And are just
yes.
like, that's just, it's literally printing money.
Yes.
It's bananas.
Yes. Are they worth any, are they still, like, is there still a Beckett? Like,
I don't know. Well, another card thing I had, they had Desert Storm cards.
Yes.
They had Desert Storm war cards.
Yeah, I got really into Desert Storm at the time. You know, there was like that influx of like patriotism, like whatever.
Yeah.
So I like got all the magazines that had Schwarzkopf on the front or whatever. And like, I was very, it's like I had the, you got the tape with Whitney Houston singing that song. And they had another song that they did, like, forget what they sang for the war at the time. It was a crazy. You look back. I don't know if those things can exist now. It's insane.
I mean, just envision a company printing out collector cards for
the kids would laugh at them
invading Iraq. Do you know what I mean like that's bananas? It's such a like It's borderline nuts.
It's true.
Like, people are like, hey, who's going to – let's glorify a war that really, in the end – I mean, I'm not a war scholar, but did the Persian Gulf War do anything? I don't know.
It's true. It's like, even for G.I. Joe, we had a lot of issues of like, how, because it's military based, how much can we go there, go there? But you're like, but it's part of the show. Like, it's part of the brand. That's what it is. But at the same time, you have these ninjas and you're like, wait, what is this brand ultimately? So it's interesting because every generation has a different idea of what G.I. Joe is. And we tried to like bridge all those things.
It's really interesting because G.I. Joe started off as like the United States military. Mm-hmm. And then once they really switched into the 3/4 inch or whatever, the hinged action figures, all of a sudden you got these ninjas, you got all these, you know, everybody's like a character, you got like a chef G.I. Joe. It really just took a bananas leap. Yeah.
I think it was started with like during the Korean War, so it was like a big thing, and then during the Vietnam War it wasn't, so they changed it to more like adventure.
Yeah.
And then they changed, and then they added the ninjas and all this stuff to it to try to sort of bridge the gap, I guess.
So you've done two properties, two animated properties. You've done Jojo and Jim.
Yes.
Jim, so you've been developing that for 7 years.
I tried to get it up for some.
How did you get the rights to that? Is, I guess, the question. Like,
it's a Hasbro relationship.
Yeah. So they just gave you...
They basically were like, the brand is dead. There's nothing, like, for the last 30 years.
And they gave you free reign of everything to do?
I mean, we definitely had discussions. They wanted to reinvent it. They wanted... The brand is for young girls. So... Yeah. And we had to do it for a budget because no one was going to pay anymore. So that was our thing. And our main thing was like, what are kids today? Like, that appealed to this specific 80s audience that music videos had just come out on MTV was just being created in 84, 83. And this cartoon came out and it was like the anti-Barbie and it was adventure and sci-fi. But they have these like musical breaks because music videos were like the cool new thing. And so we're like, well, what's the cool new thing now? Well, internet videos are that. Well, but that's sort of everywhere anyway. But that's actually this generation are makers. They create things. They create music. They create movies. They create artwork. They spread it online. They do photos. And so we wanted to be about a girl who was in this generation, who understood those things, and music was a part of her life, but at the same time, all that stuff. So we had these. So we incorporated YouTube videos as sort of our Greek chorus through this movie. So we have all these different YouTube videos that come in and out as part of our score, or just randomly come on as part of sort of the texture of their story. So that was sort of the approach that we took.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you had Disney cards.
Yes.
And you mentioned, obviously, we're the same age, so I'm assuming you watched a lot of like cartoons after school or things.
Absolutely.
Like that. What were some of your like cartoon influences? Because I know for me, there's like getting into the business and the industry, you know, my childhood toys and comics and all that had a lot of inspiration. And I'm always curious, and I'm from Michigan, so I'm curious. I'm obviously fishing for I got an interesting thing that I read here that inspired one of my favorite cartoons, but I'm curious to see what on the West
DuckTales,
Coast.
DuckTales, Animaniacs, Tiny Toons. It was Tailspin, it was Darkwing Duck, it was all those like right that was like
the prime
time. As I started to go away, Darkwing Duck started to come into play,
here.
And Tailspin was probably the latter end, but started to come in. But like all those things, I would watch all the time.
Yeah.
You couldn't get the music or anything. So I recorded on an audio tape, and I remembered all the words from these things. I remembered like. I think it's Yakko's world where he says all the nations of the world.
Okay. Do you still remember any?
I can remember parts of it.
Okay, let's see how far we can go. Okay. United States,
Canada,
Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador, too, Puerto Rico, Colombia,
Venezuela. Wait. Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica, Belize, Nicaragua, Bermuda, Bahamas, Tobago, San Juan, Paraguay, Uruguay, Suriname, and French Guiana, Barbados, and Guam. Norway and Iceland. Wait,
Norway and Finland and Iceland. Norway and Sweden and Iceland and Finland and Germany now in peace.
Switzerland, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Italy, Turkey, and Greece.
Poland, Romania, Scotland, Albania.
Oman, Cambodia, Malaysia, then Bangladesh, Asia, and China, Korea, Japan. And that's kind of where
that's all I know. That's it. Things like that, right? And
that
something.
Is that weird that we both know this?
It's
everyone
it's,
in the booth right now thinks we're freaks, but yeah, you know what?
It's okay. It's peculiar though.
I mean, now all the countries are different, so there's no need for it. But.
but it's things like that. Like, believe it or not, like my brother and I were talking about how because there's not a lot of like you have a lot of like action movies and things like that.
Yeah,
but you also don't. There's not a lot for. Like kids that are original in the sense of like Indiana Jones, you had the iconic hero and he went on adventures and it was like for all ages,
totally.
Or even like DuckTales or the Rescue Rangers, which was obviously Rescue Rangers was just Magnum PI and Indiana Jones.
But those pictures are insane online. So I did insane. Not, I never understood that until it's, I watched it until I saw the
makes
pictures.
So much sense.
Makes so much sense.
But like even DuckTales and Tailspin, and I got an interesting thing about where Tailspin comes from, but. DuckTales was like you're this kid, and you're, it made the world, even though it was like a fake world.
Yeah,
it made you wanted to go outside to go on adventures
totally.
Or whatever.
Totally. Same with like Muppet Babies.
Muppet
like,
Babies
made you want to imagine things. And
Muppet
go to
Babies. Work. I didn't know, and you're a couple years older than me, so maybe you've seen this, but I didn't know. I feel like I remember seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark for the first time.
Okay.
And seeing that ball scene and thinking they took this from the Muppet Babies intro because the intro to Muppet Babies had Kermit dressed as Indiana Jones running from the ball. And I feel like that was – I maybe have seen that and then it's like, holy cow. And it just clicks because it's like you have all these adults making things that are actually much like Animaniacs. Like it was so funny. Yeah. Because you really had people like
and
our age making it.
And Spielberg was a producer on that and was part of all the Tiny Toons and all those things. So it was all sort of embedded together in this weird way across all demographics.
All demographics.
Yeah.
And that's what's – it's interesting. Like the really great kids shows were made for kids, but they were also made by adults like us who would want their kids to watch this fun adventure stuff.
Yeah, the Pixar stuff is the closest stuff to that, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tailspin, you mentioned Tailspin.
Yes.
Obviously, I was fishing for Tailspin because Tailspin's one of my favorites.
Yes.
But Tailspin, apparently, not only was it, I mean, obviously, it's utilizing characters from the Disney's The Jungle Book.
Yes.
But the Tailspin is actually based off of an old television show from 1982 called Tales of the Gold Monkey, which was actually developed.
I had no idea.
it was created by a gentleman by the name of Donald Belisario, who also created Magnum PI. But I'm gonna read through fast these bullet points of this this television show, Tales of the Gold Monkey, and tell me it's like you read this and you're like Tailspin.
Yes.
So the series stars Jake Cutter, who's a air cargo delivery guy.
Check.
His mechanic is a good-hearted, alcoholic, memory hazy goofball.
Yeah.
Check. He's his best friend is named Louis, who owns a monkey bar in an island.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's like all.
Was this officially a thing, a cover of it, or not? Or they it,
well,
just...
like even.
That's nuts.
Down here it says this show was an inspiration for the Disney animated series Tailspin, according to that series' creator, supervising producer Jim Magan, which was, I mean, you look on the Tailspin Wikipedia and it's not mentioned. It's, it just says it's mentioned by the Jungle Book people.
Yes, yes.
But it's very, like it's all of those. It's like exactly
nuts.
Like the island with Louie. It was really interesting. Aristotle here just texted me here. The ball scene is actually from a Donald Duck comic book. Apparently, Indiana Jones was inspired because, which is where like the DuckTales and the Donald Duck comics were adventure comics prior, and that's like DuckTales and the Donald Duck comic books from the 60s were part of the pulp inspiration that inspired Steven Spielberg.
Really?
And George Lucas. Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all.
I do have a Kasdan and Lucas and Spielberg after, I think, Close Encounters or after Jaws, one of those, they were all hanging out on like a beach and like hanging out being best friends or whatever. And they started getting these ideas for like Indiana Jones.
Yes, I heard
and
about
they,
this.
They've yes. recorded, they recorded a bunch of their conversations, like doing their
I think this is the weekend thoughts. That like Star Wars came out.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. And they put a lot of that, they recorded,
I think
the
it was
plot.
The Kanapali Coast in Kauai.
Probably. I think that'll yes. – I'll have to look to see if it's listed, but I have a printout of their recorded like transcript conversation where it's like they talk about everything. Like,
why was there a transcript? How's there –
Because they were making this movie or whatever, and it may have not been recorded on that beach, but once they conceived the idea, then the three of them had like writers' meetings, and they would talk about what they want to do, and I guess they were recording it because then they would type out – like the in Temple of Doom, the cart chase through the caves, they talk about wanting that in there, but it would have been way too long for – it would have been like a 9-hour movie if they included everything they wanted.
Yeah, no, I the more I do movies, the more I want to record all the conversations because I want to know where the ideas come from, because you forget. You're like, who did that? How did that? Where did that? And usually it's some combination of everybody sort of pitching in some way. But it's so fascinating to know where I – because it just comes out of nowhere. Ideas, that's one of our – the best parts of our job is – things come from thin air, and when we're talking about magic specifically, like these magicians, that's what they have to do every day is figure out, okay, of the things that are available to us, how do we make a really cool story and trick from this?
Yeah, so let's talk about that magic here, because you're now you see me too is heavily it's magic. It's
it
a magic heist movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Really good movie. Really fun movie. I'm a huge fan of heist movies in general.
Nice.
So it'd be hard for me to not like a heist movie because I just like heist movies. But I also love magic, and I love the cast. Mark Ruffalo is very
the best.
He's so good in it as well. Woody Harrelson too. I mean, especially in this one. I'm not, you know, he's great in this, you know, not to give anything away, but Woody Harrelson is Cheers is one of my favorite.
He's so good. Cheers. And I rewatched that after having worked with him, and you see his genius. He's so good in Cheers. I forgot.
I mean, even with Coach, I like Cheers with Coach, but Cheers in general, even in the Woody area when Woody was just a younger coach. It was the same character.
Yes.
But Cheers, in my opinion, is like the funniest sitcom of all time. But he's so good in this movie.
Yeah.
And you were talking about like the idea for magics and all that. And so were you when obviously Now You See Me 1 came out?
Yeah.
And it was a success, and they were planning on a sequel.
Yeah.
When did you get involved in the sequel? Because I know some director friends of mine, for either, you know, original properties or even like sequels, you have to go into like a pitch meeting or whatever and pitch your vision of it or whatever and so forth. Or were they just approached? Did they just come to you? Mm-hmm. Or how did you get involved? And Now You See Me Too. And then in that regards, once you came on as director, how much influence over like the screenplay or the story or maybe some of these magic tricks that you talked about?
Well, every movie is different, but this movie in particular, I was in the middle of Gem. I was shooting Gem. And Lionsgate came to me. I'd known the producers, Alex Christman, Bobby Cohen, from before. I'd known the head of the studios. They released Step Up 2 and Step Up 3, which were my first couple movies. So I knew everyone in the game.
Yeah.
They came to me, and at first, I'm a huge fan of the first one. I love the first one.
I loved it.
Very surprised me. I didn't know what to expect on the first one, but the tone, the thing, it was like a really cool, and the cast was just so cool. It's like the cast you wouldn't think could work together in that way. They're just all so great. And so the first thing was like, why are they making a sequel? And it was so great. Me coming in, usually I come in to like shake things up a bit or try some new things. When you come in for a sequel that's very successful, you're like, well, if I'm just going to do the same thing, I don't really want to do this. And so sat down with them, and the idea of, listen, we want to shift the perspective, like magic, and Ed's a genius. He wrote this script and wrote Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Get Out of Town.
Yes. It was like a comedy act
that
him and his buddy did, and so he wrote the script. And then he also did Men in Black. Ed is an absolute genius and amazing comedy person as well.
Holy cow. Yeah.
A Gary Shandling show he worked on for years. I mean, he's done a shitload of stuff, and
Charlie's Angels,
he's been around. He has a great, if you ever look up Ed Solomon, he's absolutely genius.
Here it does say on his thing, it says there is a Bill and Ted 3. Has he said it?
I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about those things, but I guarantee you I asked him about everything that you read on the internet about it. So they pitched like every position you sit in a movie in a magic trick is different. And this one we want to, in the first one, if it was a magic trick in itself, it's all on stages and you don't get to hang out with the horsemen. In this one, we're going to go backstage with the horsemen, be with them more, which is the best part of it.
Yeah.
And then watch them be placed in a magic trick and they have to use their skills and their understanding of magic to get out. And one of the big things I was like, well, I don't want to say that hocus pocus magic exists. Like, I love magic. I'm a huge fan of Copperfield and Blaine and all these people. And I love
at the end of the first one, I believe, weren't they kind of insinuating that hocus pocus?
It was a gray line.
Yeah,
and I was like, I just don't want to go there because it makes magic. The whole point of magic is to watch it in real time and to see that we're not cheating. And so we knew we had to shoot this in a way that people knew we weren't cheating. Yeah, we had to like stretch a couple things here and there.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like when her head gets chopped off and when they're doing these tricks, like we had to build those things in the most least cost effective way possible because we wanted people to know that it was physically being done. And so that idea really intrigued me. And then the idea of going to London and Macau, and then obviously the cast. And then I had to fly around the world to each of the cast members to get their approval. So I flew to like Berlin. Woody was shooting Hunger Games.
Okay.
Went to London where Isla was and where Mark was, and went to Atlanta where Jesse was. I mean, they're all doing like franchise big giant movies.
Huge ones.
So it was both intimidating, scary.
Yeah, Jesse and Mark especially.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, more so now with the DC and Marvel universes.
Yeah, and I was just and I had to sit there and be like, oh yeah, I did this Justin Bieber movie. And they're like, what? But they were great. They were totally cool to me. Once we shared the vision, and they totally got it, and they were down, and they all showed up when we were doing, you know, our first day or the week before shooting, and threw them into magic camp, like put them through the ringer, and we had to all work together in like these big scenes where there's 9-10 people in it, and they couldn't have been more gracious and more kind and more giving to me for doing that, because they could have revolted anytime, you know. And Morgan Freeman's like yelling at me to pull up my pants, and Michael Caine's telling stories about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and like it was one of the most fun sets I've ever been on, because everybody loved each other and everyone wanted to hear everybody's stories.
Do you remember any stories from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels? Because that's one of my favorite movies. Steve Martin's like my favorite of all time.
So many stories.
And that movie's so funny. Do you mind if I go to the bathroom? Oh, thank you.
Yes. They had I can't say anything specifically because I don't want to give away any if he's whatever. But they had a blast on that movie.
Holy cow.
I mean, that's like Hollywood at its like prime and them at their prime in like, I forget where they shot it, but it's like...
That movie is so good.
You
want to talk about... I mean, that's kind of like a fun heist movie in theory when you look at it.
Yeah.
It's like one of those con man...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I had to make a list for like all of my favorite heist movies, and you forget like sometimes movies that you don't think are heist movies.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting genre, actually.
Yeah.
But that's what's fun about this movie is that magic is such a different element to it. And we get... It's a show... but has some other intention in it. And like a musical has musical numbers in it to get a character from one place to the other, we use these magic tricks and have to figure out ways how to progress a character, progress a storyline, or whatever.
It's really interesting that this is – I feel like it's almost one of the first – I mean, or maybe they're just not as known of – as far as heist movies with the guise of like magic, and I'm doing quotes as far as illusions.
Yes.
Because when you look at like – you look at, you know, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels or Ocean's 11 or what was it, Grifters.
Yep.
And you look at all these like – or like The Sting. You look at these heist movies or these con movies, and they're all in theory like every heist movie or every con movie or whatever where there's like misdirection and stealing, and there's always like a twist at the end and all that. They always use like almost – I mean – it's kind of surprising that it took so long to bring the illusion aspect to the foray.
Yeah, it really is.
Because they're all kind of tricks anyways. They're all illusion, like even in Ocean's 11 with the fake, you know, the remake with Brad Pitt and all them.
Yeah.
The remake of the elevator and all that and the bank vault. And it's all just misdirection anyways.
Totally. And that's ultimately like magic is storytelling. Magic is manipulation. It's psychology. It's science. It's technology. It's all these things. And it's not actually the trick. It's how you present the trick.
Absolutely.
And where you bring your viewer and what you want them to pay attention to as you do something else. And that aspect of magic is so interesting and that this movie can dive into and does. does, and what, and I think the world is bigger than even these two movies so far, that you can really dive deeper in, like,
yeah,
magic tricks are in politics, are in religion, are in every aspect of our life. The fact that we believe that this piece of paper with a dead president has value is a magic trick in itself.
Oh, absolutely.
And that these stock things that we buy through a computer actually has this number. And we all agree.
Yeah.
Or that we have this election and that there's no war. Nobody gets killed. Everybody votes. And then we agree that this person is now our leader. And that's it. Like, that's kind of a miracle, actually.
Lizard people. Do you know what I mean? Because I was looking. There was the last, I believe, James Monroe. I believe it was his. He was the fifth president, but it may have been the fifth election or his reelection,
yes,
where he ran unopposed years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very like this election. It's a really bananas idea how there's so many people upset at everything.
Yes,
but yet the magic trick is we're still just okay with it being a two-party system and all of this.
Isn't that crazy?
You know what I mean? Like, we're, yeah, all just sitting around being like, nobody's happy about any of the candidates. Everybody's disgruntled about how things are being handled. And yet we're ready to just rinse and repeat and,
yeah,
and do the same thing. And then in 4 years, worry about it again when it's like,
yep,
it's not okay.
Yep. And we've been so accustomed to comfort, to, like, we've been driven to believe that we need to be happy. And,
yeah,
every moment, as long as you're happy, everything's good.
Yeah.
When it's like, what is actual happiness? And,
yeah,
like, that can change. That's a choice that you make, maybe. But, like, then what – then you don't want to do anything that disrupts your comfort. You don't want anything to disrupt to be able to Google that thing and to look up your thing and not – you don't want to be on any list. You don't want,
yeah,
to ruffle any feathers. And that is, like, scary, because that's when we're just sitting here letting everything happen around
it's
us.
It's the Matrix, letting everything – I mean, yeah, it's happiness. I always say happiness is like a form of contentment. Like, you're – to truly be happy, you almost have to be unhappy, because you're trying to accomplish things and do challenges and make,
yeah,
new things. And you get brought down or whatever. And the idea of, to me, like the almost the facade of, like, just status quo is like that content, like, you're just being.
Yeah, totally.
And just being isn't really, to me, happiness, or isn't
totally
doing anything. And you're just letting the world tell you how to live your life, be it,
yeah,
you know, buy these products or vote for only these two candidates. Or if you don't vote for this, if you don't vote for the lesser of two evils, you're throwing your vote away. Like, people are like,
yeah,
people who still want to vote for Bernie are getting yelled at because, oh, you're going to throw your vote away. And it's like,
yeah,
but nothing's going to change if you can't be who you want to be.
Yeah.
And
totally.
There's so many, the magic trick is like, this is how to do it.
Yeah.
And it's so weird.
And that's why storytellers are so important in this
absolutely
day and age. Like, knowing how people
edit.
Have
you seen Nice Guys?
I have not seen Nice Guys.
Oh, okay. I can't. There's plot points that's so similar to what we're
talking
about.
But no, understanding how people – it should be general education to know how to edit, because,
yeah,
to understand how a shot influences another shot, what that makes you feel, how music changes how you feel,
yeah,
makes you decode what you're being presented,
oh,
and makes you see things in a different way. And you can – accept it or not, and even but you at least know what you're being sold. And then as a storyteller, movies can either be a part of the pacifying thing where you just are like escape and thing, and you don't really, and then you just keep going on with your life, and it,
yeah,
you know, or it can actually say something and change how you feel. And we should have both. I mean, they're both have their own values, but you have to have people that are pushing those limits.
Absolutely.
In order to have the power of what this medium does. And all these storytellers on YouTube and even Twitter and Instagram that are making, or Vine, using these little things, like, there's so much power in what they're learning right now, and I can't wait to see what this generation does with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Hopefully it's for good.
I hope everybody uses their powers for good, because the entertainment, that's like, from the dawn of time, entertainment has either been used to just entertain,
yeah,
or to deliver a message.
Yes.
And whether it's like a hidden message against the powers that be, you know, you got old plays and all that are,
yeah,
satirical plays that are just cutting down the establishment, you know,
yeah,
and spreading, you know, help causing revolt and revolution, or some of them are just straight up fun,
yeah,
comedies. And it's,
yeah,
or music, you know, you have these great pop songs, but then you also have these like meaningful
powerful
songs,
yeah,
powerful songs, you know, uniting the world and uniting places. And it's,
yeah,
the everything's getting so easier. You can make a movie with your iPhone and on your computer,
yeah,
versus, you know, 20 years ago needing to get, you know, film stock and,
yeah,
all that. And there's so many stories,
yeah,
still yet to be told.
Yes. And I think there's a war for our souls right now going on the internet everywhere that spreads. And we either We can either go in two directions. Is it, you know, it starts off with like porn to get the internet to actually be activated.
Or VHS. I mean, porn started.
Exactly.
The video cassette.
And then you're saying, okay, well, what are we saying now? Are we selling stuff here? Okay, is this for e-commerce or is this for some political thing? Or is it all of these things? And then who's driving that conversation and how are we doing? And I think we're in the beginning of this conversation that we're like children on the internet right now. Like we make a big ruckus about things. We complain about things. We lash out. We destroy people's lives with it. We pick up, and then eventually we're going to mature over time of what this thing means. We let everything open right now. We're like, oh yeah, share it. And then we're going to have some reckoning. I think what happened to Sony on that email system is going to happen to the world. And we're going to have a choice. They're going to create a little search bar and you can search who wrote about you of all your friends, who your lover, and what happened if you wanted to. And then we're going to have to choose to see it or not see it. And if we choose to see it, the reality will be everyone's kind of fucked up and everyone's a little bit weird. And then we forgive each other and move forward and say, that's who we are. Can we be better than this that we've been playing in the shadows? And I think that got really deep and dark. But I feel like that's going to happen to
us. I mean, it's like what's like everything that's going on with, you know, to call back to wrestling, Hulk Hogan and Gawker. This lawsuit with Hulk Hogan and Gawker. Hulk Hogan, Gawker somehow acquired a sex tape that was not intended to be released. They release it. Hulk Hogan found it as, you know, an infringement of his rights, so he sued them. Most recently, and he won an obscene amount of money, which could bankrupt Gawker.
Yes.
Somehow or another, recently, it's been uncovered that Hulk Hogan's law firm was being bankrolled, and his lawsuit was being funded by a billionaire, some guy named Peter Thiel or whatever, who's a tech, you know, guru and billionaire from the San Francisco area, I believe.
Yep.
Gawker, one of Gawker's subsidiary companies, did like a slanderous thing against him a while ago, and they're inciting this as being like a revenge thing. And it's like, because Thiel was bankrolling a lawsuit against a company that has done a lot of this. So it's like, and now people are like, oh, what's going to happen when you have all these other billionaires going lawsuits? And it's like, well, what about the people who can't afford great lawyers against things like that? But it's also like, you mean to tell me these major companies aren't secretly funding other things that nobody knows about? So the fact that a billionaire is funding a lawsuit is no different than these billion-dollar companies secretly funding, you know,
a lobbyist,
or even, you know, to tie it back to the beginning of these cartoons to sell toys.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe was an advertisement for a toy.
Yeah.
So how is that like?
Yeah. But the awakening of seeing these things, of knowing these things now, will take time. Some things we know, but then my parents don't quite know yet.
Yeah.
But once everybody knows, it's going to all even out. Or at least I hope.
I hope so.
Because it's all the same.
It's all the same, and everybody thinks it's not the same. But in the end, it's like once all that, you know, the information dump, the data dump is out there.
Yeah.
It almost will put everybody on the same page to an extent to where it's like, okay, well, now as humans, what do we do with this amazing technology that we have?
Yeah, and now that we know we're all a little bit shit, so how do we move forward?
Yeah. Like,
now we can't put on that face of this or that. That whole Sony thing was crazy.
Isn't it wild?
You know, you want to look up your name. You want to see who wrote about
you. Were you up for any gigs
I'm definitely in those emails sometimes.
Were you in any of the data dump that Sony leaked?
I might have been.
Really?
I can't say if I was looking at it or not.
Yeah, but you were.
I mean, you're tempted
Were you up for MI3 at any point or MI4 or anything?
No, I wasn't up for any of those things. But they, you know, the good thing is for me, reaffirmed good people that I know it wasn't a negative thing on me.
So that's good.
That was good.
That's great.
But my heart was racing for sure.
What aside from Now You See Me 2 coming out this weekend, because this will come out in a couple weeks.
Yep.
What are you excited about? What do you got coming up? What are you working on? Do you have any projects lined up in the pipeline that you're really excited about?
I mean, I'm attached to another one if we're so lucky to do that. You know, we never know until the movie comes out.
Yeah.
But I think the world is big enough. We have some great stories. The cast loves each other. We had such a great time.
You got the Chinese market because it takes place over there. So you got the got a four quadrant picture here.
Exactly. So we'll see how it goes, but I'm excited for people to see it. I'm attached to this movie called Crazy Rich Asians.
Okay.
Is a great book if you haven't read it. It's like, it was a huge book a couple years ago. There's two books now, written by Kevin Kwan. It's awesome. It's almost like a, it's all about rich Asian kids in Singapore and this experience of this girl who goes over there with her boyfriend and doesn't realize her boyfriend from NYU is actually like not the prince, but like the most eligible rich bachelor there. And so all the cat claws come out and she's like put into a tough spot. And she as an Asian American, it's all Asian cast. So her as an Asian American coming into this world, and
you don't
want
to cast any white actresses as any of these Asian women.
No.
You don't want to be listed in any of that.
It's funny how many, even now, you can tell the hurt that has happened, because even when it's a book that has all Asian actors, it's called Crazy Rich Asians. There are no white actors. There's no white characters, and yet people on the internet are like, doubt it, doubt that they'll ever make that, doesn't say anything about us or those people. It just says about like the system that we're in, that people can't even believe that a Hollywood studio would release a movie and do a movie like that. So a big part of me is, you know, excited to do it, because one, it's a great film. It's fun. It like breaks the mold, stomps on it, throws glitter all of it, pours crystal on it, and then like we blow it out of the water. And the characters are, some are immoral, some are like are fun and crazy, others are materialistic, and it doesn't apologize for any of these characters. It just shows like, yeah, Asians, there's a lot of different style and ideologies of different Asians all around the world. And yes, they're racist to each other. And yes, they're materialistic. And yes, they also have great, great hearts. Yes, they're creative. Yes, they have good style. All these things together. And I think it's going to be really, to me, it's a very important movie to be made. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really great. And you're attached to that.
I'm attached to that. And there's a couple other things cooking that we'll see which one goes first. You never know in this business, but
yeah. That's really great.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing all of those.
Thank you.
I enjoyed Now You See Me Too.
Cool.
I got to ask you this, because this also mentioned, and it's Now You See Me Too. Why not the Now You Don't?
This is the question I get at every
Obviously. I expected
more from you. However, I understand.
I got to end it on just the obvious. I got to end it on the obvious question that everybody's going to, every person's going to mention.
Well, I feel for you only because, everyone on Twitter who writes that comment thinks they're the first one to write their comment.
Of course.
So they're not. Yeah. But two, I said the same thing when I went in to meet on the movie, and they had it on – we had it on our list, but at a certain point the marketing team was like, you can't sell a movie called Now You Don't.
And for my defense, I'm literally just reading it off of the Wikipedia here. I wasn't going to bring it up on my own.
I think they had such a headache selling the idea Now You See Me for the first movie. They're like, we spent so much money to sell this idea.
Yeah.
Let's keep it Now You See Me and not add Now You Don't. Yeah. And for some reason, marketing people don't like Don't.
Don't. That's – you know what? That's That's an interesting thing.
It's a weird thing, right?
To have negatives, have like an...
I don't really believe it, to be honest, but I don't know. I'm not in that. They know better than me, so...
I guess. I'm not a poster maker.
Exactly.
I just make fake posters for detective movies that I'm writing.
Do you? Nice.
Friends. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
You want to see one?
Let's see it. You Photoshop that shit?
I do. Let me... nice. I'll pull it up here. My buddy and I, David, do you watch any Netflix? Do you watch...
Yeah.
My buddy's on a show called Flaked.
With
that just came out.
Yep, I haven't watched it yet, but I'll be sure to watch it.
He's on that, and we're writing a detective movie that's set in like the suburbs, like we're like shitty. It's almost like The Burbs.
Nice
meets. Let's see if I can find.
Have you seen that movie? There's a documentary I'm in the middle of on Netflix called Summer. Gosh, what is it called? The guy's in a van with all his eight kids that he's like moving around. He's like a surfer dude. It is an amazing documentary. You have to see. What is this? The Hardy Brothers. Nice.
And
so
we're
are
like,
you doing it?
Yeah, we're writing it. Yeah. So if you want to direct The Burbs meets Training Day, you can. We'll attach you to that if you want.
Just
hit me up.
Love it.
The tagline is, the Neighborhood Watch just got a promotion from themselves. And we're like promoting ourselves as the Neighborhood Watch. It's
awesome.
Really stupid.
Wait, can I see the bottom? Do you have like a...
No, that's just it.
There's no billing block?
No billing block. No. Yeah, it's just us two dudes that nobody knows.
All right. Cool. I like it.
I'll do a billing block. I'll do buy this and this and this. That's a good idea. No, you see me don't. no, this is exactly why.
It's not
now you see, yeah. No, well, now you see me too.
Yes.
Comes out this weekend. Thank you so much for doing the show. Where can everybody find you on the internet and social media and all that type of stuff?
You can go to Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, and it's at John M. Chu, JonMchu.
That's awesome. And are you on Snapchat or any of that stuff?
I am on Snapchat, but I don't do it a lot. But I'm going to be better at it.
Yeah, well, so you got to, because apparently I just read today that it's got more users than Twitter.
I know. It's a lot of work, though.
Isn't it wild?
Like, I can set some things up, and I don't have to be in real time on other things. But on Snapchat, you like
you have to be there.
Yeah.
And it expires, and it's like, what's the point of just putting something that disappears?
And then most of the time, if I'm editing, I'm in a dark room. It's like not that interesting. Yeah. So I can like shoot my shoes, and I don't know what to shoot.
People love shoes.
I know. And their food and their workouts. They love that. They love walking. Like the walking shot on Snapchat is like the shot.
I've done a few of those.
So, and you just are talking randomly. But now that it plays all the way through, though, it's fascinating because I do actually, it's kind of evil because I do sit there more. And I don't realize how long I'm spending.
I've watched some stories from start to finish. I've watched some like 3-minute stories. And they're 3-minute stories, but each thing is only 10 seconds. So that's like 30 things I'm clicking through.
Yes. And then there's some people I just always swipe through.
I'm
okay, I have to follow you, but I'm swiping through.
Yeah. I'll click it so when you scroll through to see who's looking, it looks like I'm watching it, but I'm not actually watching it.
I don't want to see your baby again. Please.
John, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thanks.
Everybody go see Now You See Me 2 out. It's really, really great. And support all of his other stuff and follow him on all those things. And continue to give us likes on Facebook and iTunes and all that. Follow me on Twitter at my name is Razzle2. Follow me on Instagram. My name is Razzle. Follow Dan, who's unfortunately not here today, at Osteoferocious. And continue doing all those things. And
if anyone can do the Animaniacs whole song, they should record themselves and hashtag
Razzle. Let's do hashtag Razzle and John Animaniacs.
Okay,
hashtag.
Okay, we want to see if you can do it. Don't read, memorize it.
Yes, memorize it. If you can do it, that's great. If you know the whole Animaniacs song verbatim without looking at the lyrics, record it and send it to us.
Yes, and the best one, I'll give you a fully signed Now You See Me by all our actors.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really great. So do that, and we'll tweet that out, and we'll have Nerdist and all that.
Perfect.
Tweet. That's a great idea. That's really great. Awesome. Thank you so much. Everybody else, thank you very much. And now the nations of the world.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.